I'm Stephanie Wilson, and you're listening to Freedom Over Fascism.
So these mandatory outing policies really put these kids at risk because no one really knows what's going on in that household. That child has a good idea of what's going on in that household. They know the things that they hear that are said. They know if it's safe or not, you know, and we have to trust that, because if we out them, we're putting them in a situation to open them up for child abuse, murder, even being rejected and put on the streets. And people say, no parent would do that. We get it every day. We get that every day where, you know, we've had one as young as 13 was literally given a backpack, what they had in that backpack, and dropped off in downtown Los Angeles.
Hi, friends. This week we have World Mental Health Day and National Coming Out Day back to back. It's a good time for us to talk about one of the battles of the slow civil war we've been discussing, and that is MAGA's deliberate otherization and dehumanization of our LGBTQ plus neighbors in MAGA-captured states, and the fear that this engenders among LGBTQ plus youth and adults around the country. In September, we talked to Lance Preston about the mental health challenges queer youth are facing and how his group, the Rainbow Youth Project, provides mental health support, specific programs to help trans youth, and legal advocacy on behalf of the LGBTQ community. So let's talk about how my conversation with Lance fits with our discussion of the slow civil war MAGA is waging against Americans. As we've discussed before, in order for fascist social movements to gain power, they need to divide people against each other and use violence or the threat of violence to gain power. I've adapted Heather Cox Richardson's explanation for the rise of fascism from her new book, Democracy Awakening, which I highly, highly recommend as a straightforward and cogent guide to how we got here and how we emerge. As Richardson says, authoritarians rise when societal change makes members of a formerly powerful group feel as though they have been left behind. In this case, white Christians. A strong man like Donald Trump downplays the real conditions that created their problems and tells them that the only reason they've lost stature is that their enemies have cheated them out of it. These leaders like Trump turn people who had previously been politically apathetic into activists out to reclaim their country. Once the strong man like Trump forges a dedicated following, he makes his followers long for a golden past that never existed by creating a false mythology based on established natural, religious, and strongly hierarchical rules. Sound familiar? Authoritarian leaders and their allies turn against groups who are historically marginalized, which is true with our LGBTQ neighbors, as well as Black and Brown communities, Jews, Muslims, disabled people, women, and more. As I discussed with Jeff Charlotte, we're all on that list somewhere, and we will eventually be targeted by the fascist movement. So we see why MAGA consistently moves to divide Americans between the worthy core and the other, which is anybody who threatens their perceived superiority. What's the purpose of othering other Americans? First, it's to build power and dominance for the leaders of the white Christian nationalist movement. And second, as we've discussed often on this program, is to distract us from the fact that the movement's donor class, who are far-right oligarchs such as Harlan Crow and Leonard Leo, as well as CEOs of large corporations, become richer and more powerful, partially by bribing politicians and judges to enact policies that continue to make them richer and more powerful, and also by ensuring that poor and marginalized communities remain poor and marginalized. White Christian nationalists and MAGA Republicans are waging war against LGBTQ plus youth by enacting don't say gay laws, forced outing, and bans on gender affirming care for both youth and adults. In addition, Moms for Hitler is on a crusade to ban books in school libraries and public libraries that contain LGBTQ and young adult content, as we saw in Fishers, Indiana, and around the country. As we know, queer kids, especially trans kids, are at a much higher risk for mental health issues and suicide than their straight friends. Even one caring adult in their lives can cut that risk by 40%. This week, The Rainbow Youth Project and other Pride organizations are having Pride events and workshops to honor National Coming Out Day. Rainbow Youth Project strives to build and foster accepting and welcoming communities for young people and their families, while also working closely with political candidates who share their core values in an effort to shape legislation impacting the LGBTQIA+ community. You can find more information at rainbowyouthproject.org. We, here at Freedom Over Fascism, along with the Rainbow Youth Project and all of you, are here to support queer folks near and far. It's so important for us, whether we're queer or straight, to let the young people in our orbit know they can feel safe and loved if they choose to come out today. I hope for a day when coming out as queer isn't a thing because closets aren't necessary and people don't have to hide their true selves and who they love. So I hope you'll join me in letting people in our lives know they can feel loved and held if they choose to come out to us. I also want to remind you that you can get early access to podcasts, bonus content, and backstage glimpses by becoming a patron and helping me feed my family at www.patreon.com/freedomoverfascism. Now for our conversation with Lance. Hi, Lance. Thanks for joining us, Freedom Over Fascism.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that you could be here. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about what you've got going on. You run the Rainbow Youth Project and are involved in a lot of legal things. Can you tell me what's going on?
So the Rainbow Youth Project, our primary focus is providing mental health services to LGBTQ plus kids all across the country. A lot of people don't realize that 60% of those youth who sought mental health counseling in the last year could not obtain it for a wide variety of reasons. Sadly, 20% of those couldn't because parents would not consent, which is bizarre to me. If your child is actually requesting mental health, that's our primary focus. We currently provide services to 997 youth in 44 states. Sadly, 44% of those young people have attempted suicide within the past year, so they're considered high risk, and their mental health treatment is top priority. That's our number one focus. We also assist LGBTQ young people who are currently suffering from housing instability. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, there's just over 4 million unaccompanied minors that are homeless, and up to 40% of those identify under the LGBTQIA+ umbrella. These are kids who have had to leave home, were evicted, rejected, just a lot of various things. And sadly, in most of the states in the United States, these kids cannot consent for services from a shelter because they are minors. And so they refuse to go to shelters. I think there's now 12 states that actually allow them to sign consent for services. But across the board, the only thing they can sign for is emergency medical treatment as a minor. So, and educational opportunities at the federal level. So we try to assist them in either A, emancipating them and helping them get into stable housing, providing them with resources. Sometimes, like right now, our Winter Impact campaign is going, which provides these young people with sleeping bags, blankets, gloves, scarves, socks, you know, beanies, things to keep them warm, because a lot of them, that's the only place that they really feel safe. And so we just try to support them, you know, as best we can in that. Our legal division is one of the most active right now because we have so many things going on with school boards all across the country, and a lot of bullying and harassment of these young people in schools. And so our legal unit is representing these young people in Title IX claims or claims with the Office of Civil Rights. We're also working with other organizations across the country to try to, you know, challenge a lot of the policies that the school boards are implementing that are negatively impacting these kids and creating crises. That's just the only way to say it. A lot of people look at book bans or they look at, you know, no pronoun usage and they think, oh, that's silly. It's simple. But for these kids, it creates a lot of mental health issues, anxiety, isolation, depression. And so we try to combat those school boards to make sure that these kids have a safe space to be in. And bullying has increased dramatically over the past 6 months. Bullying has now is now resulting in a lot of physical attacks that are resulting in injuries for kids as young as 13. So trying to make sure that the schools are enforcing these, they all have these wonderful anti-bullying policies on paper, but they're just not enforcing them. So we try to encourage them legally to enforce those policies.
Wow. This is across the board and not just in places where they have the draconian laws against, you know, the outing laws and the pronoun laws.
No, we're seeing it kind of across the board.
That's horrible. Can you tell me, though, a little bit about, obviously, these laws are putting kids into crisis, but how does it play out for kids who aren't on the streets, who have families who are more or less accepting? How is it playing out in states like Florida and Indiana and all of the rest of them, where you have the Don't Say Gay or the anti-trans legislation that's taking away the ability to receive gender-affirming care? How's that going?
Well, I am currently in Florida now because of this. We had several school boards down here, Orange County, which is Orlando, Bay County, Panama City Beach, that sent out a letter to students just before school started detailing how the policy was going to work. There's a lot of confusion because some teachers are doing things that other teachers aren't in response to the law. It's just created chaos, to be honest with
you. It's intentionally vague.
Yeah. And for instance, in some school districts in Florida, let's say that you and your husband has a child named Robert, but they go by Rob. They are not allowed to go by Rob unless you authorize that by a formal consent.
It's insane. Yeah, it is insane. Kid who's doesn't go by his legal name. And
some teachers would not allow him to do that without that consent. You know, if that consent was not on file, he would not be allowed to do that. And if that teacher called him by that name without that consent, they can lose their license to teach.
I understand that these laws are super vague. So then people are really scared. Teachers are scared. Administrators are scared. Physicians are scared that if they cross some invisible line that they don't quite know exactly where it is, that they're going to get fired or thrown into jail. Is this what's going on, or are some of these laws actually much more clear and is very clear what they can and can't do? And it's really cruel.
Some of them are clear, but yet still vague, if that makes any sense at all, because they're open to interpretation. And I think that that's where the problem lies, is a lot of administrators, a lot of physicians, a lot of teachers, a lot of people just don't understand exactly what the laws mean. And that creates problem. But one thing that I think people fail to realize as well is, let's say, you know, hypothetically, that state X proposes a law that is anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ, or mandates outing of one of these students. And that bill travels its way through, ends up failing, and is never implemented. Because it was initially discussed, you have already created fear in these children. You have already created depression, isolation, anxiety, all of these negative emotions in these kids. And that's what we're seeing in a lot of states where these policies aren't actually in place. Because they see it happening in other states, it creates a fear that it could happen there. Perfect example of this was when, you know, Ken Paxton, the AG in Texas, started requesting driver's license records for transgender people. Any person who had changed their gender marker on the driver's license, he wanted those records. Of course, then the Department of Public Safety said, wait, we can't do that. Then Florida did this with universities. Then Vanderbilt University in Tennessee released transgender patient records to the AG in Tennessee under the guise of there's an investigation going on. There is an investigation going on, but no one knows what that investigation actually is. Kids in other states are seeing that, especially trans people and trans adults. And now they're scared to participate in mental health. They're scared to go to the doctor. They're scared to seek the treatment that they need, even if it's primary care, because they're afraid at some point those records may be turned over and they may actually face consequences. Whether there's a threat of that or not, it's already in their mind that this is possible. This is something that can happen. And it's already creating, you know, emotional and mental health issues for them, which is really sad. And, you know, I kind of have this saying, and it's a sad reality. The mere discussion of the discrimination, the hate, and the bigotry is enough to create the effect, whether it ever goes into to full force or not. It has already created what I believe is the desired effect, which is trying to keep these young people in the closet, trying to keep them, you know, to conform with what society wants them to be and disallowing them to be who they are.
Well, I think one of the things that's really going on is their goal is to create an us and a them. And in some ways, it doesn't matter to them who that them is. It's just who is the easiest, right? Because if we're fighting each other, then we don't notice that they and their funders are getting richer and richer, that they're grabbing more and more power by doing this. And I think Steve Bannon calls it flooding the zone with shit by just constantly one thing after another, abortion, trans care, that we don't even know how to deal with it in an orderly enough manner so that we deal with it well. And in the meantime, that confusion helps them build more and more power.
That's true. And I just was on a Zoom meeting with other organizations this morning talking about this exact thing and about how the messaging is so unclear from our side, because once we formulate a message to, you know, to one thing that's going on, there's 15 other things that come from another direction that messaging doesn't really fit, and you have to try to quickly adjust. So it's been tough the last few months, really, really tough. And we're seeing the impacts with the youth, because we're currently taking over 300 crisis contacts each and every day. We're set up to take 100, and we're doing over 300. And like I said, something that's going on in California right now with the mandatory outing policies, and I just learned not 15 minutes ago that two more school districts in California have passed this mandatory outing policy within the past 24 hours. Now you have kids in other states that are starting to think, is my state going to do this?
Right.
You know, what am I going to do? One of the biggest supports that most of these kids have is a GSA, a Gay Straight Alliance. We have found that over the past few months, that enrollment is dropping because they don't want their name associated with a GSA because they're afraid that they will suffer consequences. And for some of those young people, that GSA is truly the only support that they have. Right. You know, that's it. It's just a very crazy time. As a gay man who grew up in the 80s, I thought that it was really bad then, and when we were facing the AIDS crisis and, mm-hmm. and everything else. But these young people today, it's just really, really, I sometimes think that it's probably more difficult for them, because most of them have already been living out. They finally built up the courage to do it, and now they're being forced, you know, to kind of go back. And that has to be really, really difficult. But I will give you a positive thing. We had a youth group here in Panama City Beach this week, and it was all to talk about the first week of school last week. There was 22 young people in that group, varying high schools, varying ages. They were so articulate, they were so intelligent, and they were so confident in standing up for themselves that it just truly moved it moved me. And one of our partners here, the LGBTQ Community Center, they were holding this youth group. And afterwards, I remember talking to the president of that organization saying, these kids are amazing. But unfortunately, they are rare. And one of the reasons that they are as strong as they are is because they have that peer support group to help each other, encourage each other, uplift each other, and support one another. For kids that are especially in rural areas, they don't have that.
Right.
So the impact can be intensified, I mean, just beyond your belief. It's immeasurable.
And I can only imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So those GSAs are sometimes the only thing that they have. And now they're too scared to participate in GSAs.
Yeah. Those GSAs, I mean, in some places, like where I live in Massachusetts, our listeners know they do. And by now they've learned a lot about my 15-year-old. At least half of his friends are queer and mostly genderqueer. It's from, you know, when there is openness, the number of kids who are coming out is unbelievable. You know, the Gen Z folks are apparently identifying as queer in one way or another at 20-25%, whereas Gen X, which is my generation, it's like 3-4%. And it must be, right? You have this thought that maybe the world is ready for you, and then to have it washed is just heartbreaking.
Well, a perfect example of that is last March and April into May, the number one reason that a young person reached out to our hotline in crisis was due to family rejection, or they had been outed by a peer and they were afraid of the consequences. Over the past 4 months, that has changed to now my government does not want me here. The adults in my community hate me. The school hates me and don't want me there. And to see that shift so quickly is really alarming, because before it was the I don't want to say normal, but it was the normal run of the mill. I'm afraid my parents will hate me. You know, I'm afraid my friends won't like me. Now it's literally my government doesn't want me to exist. And when you hear a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old say that, it's powerful. I mean, that's it's very powerful. And sadly, again, a lot of them just don't have the resources because the schools have stripped all those resources. So they don't know where to go. They don't know who to talk to. And it just creates, you know, even more problems for them. I hate to say this, but, you know, based on, you know, statistically driven data, it's only going to get worse as we move into the 24 election. Because this is going to be the big election talking point, is transgender care and, you know, LGBTQ students. And it's a little scary in what we do, because we already see very high numbers. But at the same time, those numbers being high is good. I'd much rather them be reaching out than being quiet and silent.
Right.
But I'm really afraid that the impact is going to be significant as we move into the election period. And we're preparing for that. I hope that we're preparing for no reason, but I don't see it as that, because it is truly the number one point for the red right radicals.
They think about how they can out cruel each other and, mm-hmm. you know, prove their cruelty bona fides. It's very scary and sad. I want to ask you two legal questions. We've heard a little bit about people moving from state to state to try to escape these laws. How much of that are you seeing?
We're seeing that quite a bit, actually. And I can give you a perfect example, because we were just talking with the Attorney General of one specific state this morning who had that same question. And in one county in that state, we had 61 contacts over less than a 30-day period of time, and 54 of those families were seeking to relocate. It's pretty significant.
So the corollary is the states that say you can't get gender-affirming care here, and if you go to a state where it's legal, we're going to come after you there, and we're going to come after the doctors there. Where do you see that going? I mean, the logical endpoint.
You know, because Missouri was actually, I think it was Missouri that was going to try that last year. And, you know, let's be honest, this is the United States. Interstate travel is something that you cannot prohibit. That's just mm-hmm. something you cannot do. And I say that loosely, because Republicans have done some other crazy things. So, you know, I could see them trying to do this. But we partner with an organization that I want to mention. Their name is Elevated Access. And mm-hmm. this is one of the things that Elevated Access does. We have some adults who do not want to receive gender-affirming care in their state because of the bills that have been passed against the youth. But Elevated Access actually is a network of over 800 private pilots with private aircraft. They fly these people to states where they can receive care. They also do this for women and reproductive rights. If a woman cannot get, you know, reproductive health care in one state, they will fly her to a state where she can get that care. So we're seeing other organizations that are stepping up to the plate in those regards for people who can't get care in one state. They can help them get to another. But it's, again, really sad that, you know, you have to do that. Now, on this, a lot of people always say, how can you possibly agree with gender-affirming care for young people? And I always tell them, I have never said that I approve of it. I have never said that I disapprove of it. I have never said that I approve of abortion. I've never said that I disapprove of abortion. What do I approve of is that decision is between that parent, that child, and that medical team. You don't call me when you're at the doctor so that I decide what treatment you receive. So why should someone else? And so I think that care has to be available, and that's a decision for them to make. And if they've made the decision that that's what they want to do, I can't tell them no, and I'm going to help them obtain that care if I can, period. You know, and then we hear the whole conversation about puberty blockers. They have been using these same puberty blockers on cisgender heterosexual kids for precocious puberty since the 80s. And nobody has ever complained about them sterilizing or chemical castration, or the parents should be charged with child abuse if they allow them to take them. And even today, they're still prescribed for that. And they don't want to go after those parents. So they literally use these kids. They use the treatments to justify their own hate and bigotry. That's really what it is.
It's all about hate and bigotry, because were they to do any research or accept what science says about gender and sex and how it's not a binary, they would, if it were a matter of logic or following science or caring about people and their welfare, it wouldn't be coming out this way. They want to accrue power. And that's why I always tell people, don't call them conservative. They're not trying to conserve anything. Yeah. They're trying to radically change how this country is governed. And mm-hmm. we need to start calling that out.
For exactly what it is. And, you know, you said the key words. They don't research. They don't want to learn. They don't want to accept any opinion that does not meet their opinion. You know, they're not going to listen to the major medical associations. They're not going to listen to the scientists. They're going to listen to, you know, QAnon conspiracy theorists and people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and people like Lauren Boebert, you know, who have no clue what they're talking about, but they throw the macaroni on the wall, and if it sticks, that's what they use for clicks, you know?
Right.
And that's who they listen to. And that's sad. But again, it goes back to what, you know, I was saying earlier. They agree and they love them because they are helping justify their own hate and bigotry, you know? And unfortunately, the kids are the ones who are suffering as a result of that.
Yeah, they are suffering. I wonder about people like the governor of Montana, whose kid is non-binary and begged their dad to not sign this bill. And he did it anyway. I can imagine what family life is like. Sadly.
I can too. And, you know, you look at Ted Cruz's child. Here's my thing. And I was blessed that my parents were always supportive when I came out as gay. I did attempt suicide at the age of 19 because I was scared. I was fearful. This was in 1989, which was a very different time. Growing up in the Deep South, you know, in a Southern Baptist family, I'd heard my whole life that I was going to hell. I was evil. You know, I was all of these bad things. But my family was always supportive. And when I sometimes listen to some of the kids in our peer group programs or in some of the, you know, the situations that they find themselves in with crisis specialists, I'm so hurt that not everybody has good, loving, supportive parents. Because right. I know, and this is kind of a really, I guess you could call it radical way of looking at it, but there are serial killers in this country that their parents still visit them in prison because they love their child. They don't understand what they did, and they don't, you know, condone what they did or whatever the case may be, but they still have love and compassion for their child because that is their child, you know? And when I see these kids who don't have that, it really bothers me. And as far as these mandatory outing policies, we have to realize there are parents who have murdered their kids because they were gay. You know, there's too many cases like that. I can't remember exactly where one was, but I was just reading about it. The daughter came out as lesbian over the phone to her father, and her father drove over 500 miles to murder her and her girlfriend. So these mandatory outing, you know, policies really put these kids at risk because no one really knows what's going on in that household. That child has a good idea of what's going on in that household. We had another, this was a few years back, and you may remember this. I think the kid was 4 or 5, and the parents literally beat that child to death because they thought that it was going to grow up gay. So I think we have to be more trusting in the kids to understand they know what their home environment is. They know the things that they hear that are said. They know if it's safe or not, you know, and we have to trust that, because if we out them, we're putting them in a situation to open them up for child abuse, murder, even being rejected and put on the streets. And people say no parent would do that. We get it every day. we get that every day where, we've had one as young as 13, was literally given a backpack, what they had in that backpack, and dropped off in downtown Los Angeles.
That so many of them are ending up on the streets is horrifying.
And when they end up on the streets, we have to talk about the realities of it. 9 times out of 10, they end up in sex trafficking. That's how they survive. You know, there's plenty of stories, on our website of kids who have gone through our housing instability program that were, prostituting themselves at 15, 16, 17 years old in exchange to take a shower in a truck stop or to get a meal. And this is what those kids are put through. So to think that you want to pass a policy that could create that while screaming that you're protecting the children is a little bit damn ridiculous.
We have to remember that that's the point. And that they're not there to care about children.
No.
I heard it said that for trans kids, if there's one supportive adult in their life, that could really mean the difference between whether they survive or not. Do you think that that's still a true statement? Gotten way harder than that?
No, I do. I believe that the statistic was that one adult ally to any LGBTQIA+ young person reduces the risk of suicide by 40%. And I believe that because they have one person to trust and confide in and to go to for support. If they have 10, they're doing brilliantly. If they have one, it's good. I say this and why I believe in this is because I see some of our crisis specialists who will literally be the first supportive person that one of these kids in crisis has ever spoken to. And I've watched them start out with a child who is so just at the end that by the time that call ends 2.5 hours later, just because they've had somebody supporting them, their entire attitude has changed. It may be brief and it may be putting a Band-Aid on it, but it has changed just from that positive interaction. And that's one of the reasons that we try to turn those calls into the mental health care, because we want to prevent those crisis calls in the future. And if we can get parental consent and we can convince them to go into mental health, we've been very successful at that. 2,100 kids, just over 2,100 in the past 15 months have gone through our program. And, we have lost some. I will not lie. We've lost 10. But we have a great success rate with that, all because they started getting support. It's not some miraculous drug or poof, it's fixed. It's from having that continuous support.
What does the support look like in your program?
It's actually very custom tailored. And that's one thing that I love. We are a nationwide organization, of course. We have kids all over the country, but we're still small enough that we can custom tailor a resolution. Sometimes it includes once a week with a licensed psychologist and peer group once a week. We do virtual peer groups, and that's all they need. Other times it's more intensive. Other times you have a family, a mother, a father, a sibling that are also struggling through the whole coming out process, or they're struggling with the fact that their young person has attempted suicide. So in those situations, we not only provide counseling to the young person that was impacted, but also to the parents and to the siblings to help them through it as well. We have this philosophy that kind of the entire family is coming out. And if they need assistance, we want to provide that assistance as well. We have 2 case managers who are absolutely amazing. One of them, Kristen, has been in doing this in pediatric psychology and psychiatry for almost 30 years. And she truly works with these families to try to figure out what's going to work for them and then make it happen. Brandon is another one. Brandon came to us after 11 years with the Trevor Project. He's very familiar with these situations. They're both my heroes because they stay on top of resources. They stay on top of everything that's going on in different locations. They have both actually flown to meet with families and meet with these young people to try to figure out what's best for them. So they really put forth a lot of effort. That's how it works. We had talked about this many times. Well, we want to offer this. We want to offer this. We want to offer this. We want to do this. And I remember both Kristen and Brandon were like, it's not going to work. Because what's going on in Alabama is not going on in New York. And what this kid in New York is facing is not what this kid in Alabama is facing. We have to be able to maneuver to make it fit, or we're gonna fail our mission. And our mission is to promote mental health stability and mental health wellness in these young people. And we were like, well, what do we do? They're like, we still custom tailor it. Our system is set up to every kid in our mental health program they receive an email from at least two of us every week. Hey, how you doing? Just wanted to check in with you. And also the parents, how are you? What's going on with you? Do you feel comfortable? Is there anything we can support you with? And we found that that's very successful by doing it that way. Sometimes it's difficult. I'm not going to lie to you. We have parents who hate us. We have parents who, you know, last year, Stephanie, I had a mother tell our entire crisis team that she would rather see her son dead than him to be happy being gay. So we deal with sometimes some parents who really, for lack of a better, you know, terminology, they need help. They need help too. So we try to support them. But I wish that there was more resources, because as we know, mental health resources are very limited. Our crisis specialists that answer these calls are all in the master's program, either psychology or social work at IUPUI. It's a work study program. So they're very astute as to what's going on. If they recognize, we unfortunately have things called SIPs, S-I-P, Suicides in Progress. If they sense that on the line, they have a licensed psychologist on call that they pull into this call within 3 or 4 minutes. So it's really a good setup, but it's all very personalized to that unique situation. And I think in the end, the young people that have reported back to us who've been successful in the program, they say that that's what helped make them successful, was that it wasn't just about sending them a brochure and referring them to places. It was actually working with them on as a case management and crisis team to make it work for them specifically. And our entire leadership team, all of us attempted suicide as teens because of our sexuality. And so it's very dear to us, and we kind of can understand some of the situations. And I think that helps as well.
Well, if people hearing this know of folks or are themselves people who could really use your help, how do they get in touch with you?
They can call us at 317-349-4073, or they can contact us by email at admin@rainbowyouthproject.org. We also, have social media accounts, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Believe it or not, we get a lot of requests through DMs on social media apps, and they are all open for DMs. We have a crisis specialist whose sole job is to monitor those DMs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for those contacts. And we get a lot of contacts through social media, so that's another good way as well.
Well, we'll put those in the show notes so that people can find that. And you also mentioned Elevated Access, so we'll put that information in as well.
They're an incredible organization. I am so proud to partner with them. We started around the same time, and they have grown just dramatically. And their volunteer network, like I said, is over 800 pilots with over 800 private aircraft, and they just volunteer to fly these patients wherever they need to get to.
I had never heard of them, and it doesn't surprise me that there are those people, just as it doesn't surprise me that there are the people on the other side. But sometimes putting together the people who want to and can help with the people who need the help
is hard.
That doesn't happen and is hard. It shouldn't be that hard. Is there anything you want to leave our listeners with, what you do or what you're seeing or how they can help?
You know, one thing that I want to remind, especially parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, even if your young person seems happy, ask the questions. Ask the questions if they're okay. We, as I said earlier, are seeing a huge uptick in bullying. We have two major cases, one from Indianapolis, where a 13-year-old came out as a lesbian, was jumped by a group of boys, ended up with a broken arm, fractured nose, bruised ribs. Another one in upstate New York who ended up with back injuries where they were hit with a ball. So make sure your young person is okay. Take the time to ask the questions, even if they're smiling and laughing and seeing that they're okay. Take the time. If you sense that there is an issue, try to talk them into reaching out to someone. It doesn't have to be us, but reaching out to someone to find the resources that they need. And that's true for all kids, not just LGBTQIA+ kids. You know, parents really, if you talk about parental rights, your first right should be to ask if your child is okay and to take action if they are not. And the fact that 20% of the 60% of kids who wanted mental health last year, their parents would not consent to that treatment, is one of the most sickening statistics that I can even imagine.
I know. And there's so many kids, LGBTQIA+ and not, that particularly after COVID, the kid mental health crisis is astounding. And if you add in, you know, all the different layers, it gets really scary. But I also know that that generation is going to be so great and powerful.
They are resilient. They are definitely persevering in their own ways. And most of them are pretty much okay. But you do have those that are not as strong, that are not as confident, that, you know, need that support. You know, I just tell parents all the time, and I'll say it again, pay attention, you know, pay attention. And ask those questions, because the morbid part about what we do is we receive those calls where parents did not ask those questions and where parents did not take that action. And then they're struggling with the loss of a child. And And that's hard, because they blame themselves and they really shouldn't, you know. So it's always important to take the time to ask those questions. And that's like, I tell that to people every day, ask the questions. Because we have people who say, oh, my child is fine. Ask the questions.
Right.
Ask the questions.
Right. If you can say, my child is fine, you haven't been talking to your kid, because there's always
Exactly. Exactly. <Right? laughs> There's always something going on. Always.
Right. Thank you so much for talking with me. And our listeners, Lance, it has been, I don't want to say a pleasure, because what we talked about was so hard, but it, I think, is so valuable. And if we can do anything to get your word out more, it is absolutely crucial for us to do that. So thanks for coming on, and we'll check in with you and see if we can update our listeners later on as well.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate you having this discussion, because unfortunately not a lot of people are. And it's an important discussion, because I think the more that people understand the consequences and the effects of these policies that they think are just small, I think it will help make a change.
Well, I hope so. And nothing in this is small.
Yeah. And I always tell the kids, I'm like, you got to keep in mind, I came out in 1988. Oh, you're old. I am. So bear with me. Bear with me. I'm still learning.
Well, the more curious we are, the better we can be for other people.
Exactly.
Thank you, and we really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/freedomoverfascism and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. We thank you for choosing Freedom Over Fascism.